This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
Rabble.ca.
Wings thanks Rabble Podcast Network for carrying our programs and urges listeners to contribute to their fundraiser. Please visit rabble.ca/donate today.
When a woman fights for power, as all women would like to, quietly or loudly, it is questioned. And yet there must be power if we are to be heard.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
1995. 10 years after the UN Decade for Women had ended, a fourth United Nations Conference on Women was held in Beijing, China. The Chinese government was fearful of permitting the customary parallel non-governmental conference to take place, and at the last minute they announced the NGOs would have to meet in Wairu, a factory town outside of Beijing. The 40,000 women who made it to that part of the conference were housed in everything from new hotels built for the occasion to half-finished concrete apartment buildings. Their activities took place largely in tents and outdoors. The appearance of then-U.S. First Lady Hillary Clinton was planned to take place outdoors as well, but things did not go as planned. Here's my report from that day.
The Chinese had promised us that it never rains in Beijing in September, but this time they were wrong. When the word got out that Hillary would be speaking indoors, women thronged to the Huairou Cinema building and massed in the rain, relentlessly pressing forward to get in, but also being very careful not to poke one another with our umbrellas. One woman standing near me was predicting, "Someone will get killed today. And for what? To see a woman who has destroyed half the world." Another woman kept yelling, "The doors are not open." But they were. It was just that there was only one airport-type screening device for bags and one metal detector, so Chinese security was only letting one person in at a time. Women started singing, "Keep on moving forward and we shall overcome," to keep the crowd at peace. By the time I got into the building, the main auditorium was full, and I was sent into a side room where we could hear the event on speakers. We had a long wait, so I started interviewing.
How do you like your experience coming to see Hillary Clinton?
Oh, it sucks.
We are really despondent.
Standing in line is wonderful because you meet all these great women.
I had a good time standing in line too.
Yes, it's fun.
We got kind of a nice feeling of camaraderie going in the side room after a while, and most of us sang along with the cultural events coordinator of the NGO Forum. Her name was Shirley Mae Springer Staten, and she was really working hard keeping the crowd pacified while we all waited for Hillary to arrive.
A letter that I received from a group of women from Macau said, "We cannot come. Our voices have been silenced. But when you sing your songs, we want you to sing loud enough that the sound will vibrate all the way to Macau. We must sing our songs for those women who could not come, those women who had to work. Those women who dare not ask their husband for fear. Those women who had to stay home to take care of the children. Those women who their government would not let them out. Keep on moving forward.
Gonna keep on. We're gonna keep on moving forward. Gonna keep on.
Okay, we just have a few more minutes. The lady over there said, "Well, where's Miss Clinton? You don't look like Miss Clinton."
Well, Miss Clinton just got a suntan, honey. I'm up here talking and she's asking about Miss Clinton. Excuse me, I'm here right now. Miss Clinton isn't here. Now she's in here sitting down. She got a seat. The sister's still out there. Chill, lady, chill. Okay, we're almost okay there now. By the time I leave here, I won't have a...
As Shirley Mae Staton's voice gave out, Irene Santiago, executive director of the Nongovernmental Forum, took the microphone.
We're all glad to be here. We wish there were more of us who could be in this room, but we all know that we had to make do because of the weather. It is my pleasure to invite the convener of the NGO Forum on Women, Supatra Masdit, to introduce our guest speaker for this very important part of our program, designed to strengthen the capacity of the global women's movement to shape the forces of the 21st century.
Good morning. We are privileged this morning to have First Lady Hillary Clinton of the United States to join us at the NGO Forum. This forum is the right place for her to be. For many years, she has dedicated her time and contributed her expertise to NGOs like the Children's Defense Fund in her country. She was then, as she is now, a strong advocate for children, for their families, and above all, for the women who care for them, nurture them, and often bring home an income no matter how small. Mrs. Clinton understands deeply the significant roles of NGOs play, not only in advocating for change, but also in implementing thousands of programs the governments cannot or will not undertake for the women and children in their countries. For her, many efforts outside and inside governments, it seemed to me that she has not always received approach. For there are still people around who are threatened by smart, capable women. Today, I want all of you to send a message that the NGO Forum on Women admires, appreciates, and salutes these courageous, committed, and caring women. The First Lady of the United States, Hillary Clinton. Thank you. Thank you so much. I feel so much at home and so much a part of this group. I only wish that in addition to the enthusiasm and interest amongst all of the NGOs who are gathered here, the weather had been more cooperative this morning, and I greatly regret that we were forced to move this occasion indoors in order to avoid any of us drowning out there. But I am very sorry that not everyone who wished to be with us this morning was able to be in. And I hope all of you will convey my personal regrets to anyone who was turned away or disappointed because of the size of this auditorium. It is a great pleasure for me to be here, and I want to start by thanking Supatra and Irene
for their leadership in this extraordinary and historic enterprise. But I also want to thank all of you who are here, because I know from looking at the lists of people who have come, knowing personally many of the Americans who have come, that in this auditorium and at this forum, there are thousands and thousands of women and men who every day work to make lives better in their communities for all people. And that is the greatest contribution any one of us is able to make. And that is why the United States and many other countries so strongly support the efforts of NGOs and have worked very hard to ensure that NGOs could participate in this forum. As many of you know, our government and other governments recognize the important role that NGOs play in policy and planning, in development and implementation and monitoring of programs that advance the progress of women. I wanted to come here to WIRO to salute you for your dedication to a cause greater than all of us. I know that many of you went to great efforts to be here. I know many were kept from attending this forum. I know that for many of you who did get here, getting here was far from easy. Many of you did not even know until the last minute that you would be permitted to travel here, and others bore great personal expense in order to come. In addition to the weather, which is not in anyone's control and is always unpredictable, I know that you have had to endure severe frustrations here as you have pursued your work. And I also want to say a special word on behalf of women with disabilities who have faced particular challenges here during these past several days. But I mostly want to thank you for your perseverance, because you did not give up, you did not stay away, you are here. And the fact that you are will make a difference in the days and months and years to come. Because even though you may not be physically present in Beijing at the conference during these 10 days, the wisdom that is accumulated here, the experience, the energy, the ideas are on full display. Thanks to your resourcefulness, your tenacity, your sense of purpose, and your spirit, you are playing an important role in this conference, and you will be the key players in determining whether or not this conference goes beyond rhetoric and actually does something to improve the lives of women and families. As I said yesterday, the faces of the women who are here mirror the faces of the millions and millions who are not. It is our responsibility, those of us who have been able to attend this conference and this NGO forum, to make sure that the voices that go unheard will be heard. This conference is about making sure that women, their children, their families have the opportunities for health care and education, for jobs and political participation, for lives free of violence, for basic legal protections, and yes, for internationally recognized human rights, no matter who they are or where they live. Time and time again, we have seen that it is NGOs who are responsible for making progress in any society. Some of us never knew we were NGOs 20 and 25 and 30 years ago. That was not even a phrase that any of us had ever heard. We were people working together on behalf of all of those rights which we care about and hold dear. But when one looks at the progress that has been made throughout the world, it is clear that it is the NGOs who have charted real advances for women and children. It is the NGOs who have pressured governments and have led governments down the path to economic, social, and political progress, often in the face of overwhelming hostility. Again, NGOs have persevered just as you have by coming here and staying here and participating in this forum. What will be important as we end the forum and the conference at the end of this week is that it will be NGOs who will hold governments to the commitments that they make. And it is important. It is important that the final platform for action that is adopted be distilled down into words that every woman, no matter where she lives or how much education she has, can understand. I think we should want every woman, no matter where she is, to believe that there are women all over the world who care about her health, who want her children to be educated, who want her to have the dignity and respect that she deserves to have. When I think of the faces that I have seen in my own country, when I think of the women who did not have health care because they cannot afford it in the United States of America, when I think particularly of a woman I met in New Orleans, Louisiana, who told me that because she did not have enough money, she was told by physicians that they would not do anything about the lump in her breast, but would merely wait and watch, because if she'd had insurance, she would have been sent to a surgeon. I think about the woman I met in a village outside Lahore, Pakistan, who had 10 children, 5 boys and 5 girls, and was struggling as hard as she could to make sure her girls were educated and wanted help to get that job done. I think of the faces of the beautiful women I met at SEWA, the Self-Employed Women's Association in India. All of them had walked miles and miles, some of them for 12 and 15 hours to get to our meeting together. And I listened as they stood up and told me what it had meant that for the first time in their lives, they had a little money of their own. They could buy their own vegetable cart. They could buy their own thread and material so that they could make income for themselves and their families. I think of the women in the village in Bangladesh, a village of untouchables. Those women who were Hindus invited to their village for my visit women from the neighboring village who were Muslims. I think of how those women sat together under a lean-to, Hindus and Muslims together in one of the poorest countries of the world, but so many of those women telling me what their lives had been changed to become because they had become borrowers and were now part of the Grameen Bank micro-enterprise effort. And I think particularly of the play that their children put on for me to see, a play in which the children acted out the refusal by a family to let a girl child go to school, and how finally, through efforts undertaken by the mother and the sister, the father agreed for the child to go to school. And then further down the road from that village, I stood and watched families coming to receive food supplements in return for keeping their girl children in school. Those are the kinds of women and experiences that happen throughout the world, whether one talks about my country or any country. Women are looking for the support and encouragement they need to do what they can for their own lives and the lives of their children and the lives of their families. The only way this conference will make a difference to these women is if the results of the conference are taken and distilled down into one page, perhaps, which states basic principles that you and I would perhaps debate and understand but may not be easily communicated. If that is done, then to carry that message into every corner of the world. So there can be sharing of experiences. When I came home from Bangladesh, I visited in Denver, Colorado, a program that is modeled on the Grameen Bank, helping American women who are welfare recipients get the dignity and the skills they need to take care of themselves and their children. So despite all of the difficulties and frustrations you have faced in coming here and being here, you are here not only on behalf of yourselves, but on behalf of millions and millions of women whose lives can be changed for the better if you resolve, along with all of us, to leave this place and do what we can together to make the changes that will give respect and dignity to every woman. I know that today at the Women's Conference, the theme is investing in today's girls, tomorrow's women, and the future. Much of what we do, we are doing not for ourselves, but we are doing for our daughters, our nieces, our granddaughters. We are doing it because we have the hope that the changes we work for will take root and flower in their lives. When I was privileged to be in New Delhi, India, I met a young woman who I think spoke for many, many women. And someone asked me yesterday at the conference if I had a copy of the poem which this young woman wrote. And I said that I did, and she asked if I could read it today, and I said that I would. Because this was a poem about breaking the silence. The silence that afflicts too many women's lives, the silence that keeps women from expressing themselves freely, from being full participants even in the lives of their own families. This poem, written by a young woman, I think is particularly appropriate since we are celebrating today the future of girls. Let me read it to you. Too many women in too many countries speak the same language of silence. My grandmother was always silent, always aggrieved. Only her husband had the cosmic right, or so it was said, to speak and to be heard. They say it is different now. After all, I am always vocal, and my grandmother thinks I talk too much. But sometimes I wonder. When a woman gives her love, as most do, generously, it is accepted. When a woman shares her thoughts, as some women do graciously, it is allowed. When a woman fights for power, as all women would like to, quietly or loudly, it is questioned. And yet there must be freedom if we are to speak. And yes, there must be power if we are to be heard. And when we have both freedom and power, let us not be misunderstood. We seek only to give words to those who cannot speak. Too many women in too many countries. I seek only to forget my grandmother's silence. That is the kind of feeling that literally millions and millions of women feel every day. And much of what we are doing here at this forum and at this conference is to give words, to break the silence, and then to act. When I was at Copenhagen for the Summit on Social Development, I was pleased to announce that the United States would make an effort to enhance educational opportunities for girls so that they could attend school in Africa, Asia, and Latin America. Today, that effort, funded with United States dollars, is being organized in countries throughout those continents by NGOs. There are so many ways we can work together. There are so many things that must be done. And let me just end with a postcard that I received. I don't know this woman, but she wanted me to carry this card to Beijing. She put on this card a prayer written in many languages. It's a prayer that applies and can be said by many, if not all, of the world's religions. And I want to end with that because I think that in many respects, what we are attempting to do requires the kind of faith and commitment that this prayer represents. O God, creator of the heavens and the earth, we pray for all who gather in Beijing, and I would add Wairo as well. Bless them. Help them and us to see one another through eyes enlightened by understanding and compassion. Release us from prejudice so we can receive the stories of our sisters with respect and attention. Open our ears to the cries of a suffering world and the healing melodies of peace. Empower us to be instruments in bringing about your justice and equality everywhere. That is my prayer as well, and with my thanks to all of you, I believe we can take the results of this forum and this conference and begin to translate them into actions that will count in the lives of girls and women who will have never heard of what we have done here, but whose lives can be changed because of what you have done coming here. Thank you all very much.
The results of the Fourth World Conference on Women included the Beijing Declaration and Platform for Action, which is still used to measure women's progress in countries around the world. The Clinton administration supported most, but not all, sections of this document. Among the parts they shunned was the section on women's access to media. They also had one firm rule, which was made explicit to their delegation to Beijing, and that was not to commit to any new or increased spending on women, either at home or abroad. Even the U.S. funds for women's literacy that the First Lady announced with fanfare turned out to be part of an older budget re-announced. To be fair, the Clintons were struggling with trying to reverse the huge deficit created by the Republican spending spree that preceded them. But they obviously didn't believe in moving funds around to increase support to historically undersupported women, and they even made cuts in welfare for women with dependent children. In their first term, the Clintons also effectively killed U.S. ratification of CEDAW, the U.N. Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women. CEDAW had been signed by Jimmy Carter in 1980. Republican presidents had refused to present it to the Senate for ratification. When Bill Clinton became president, he quickly announced he would present two treaties to the Senate, the Convention Against Racism and the Convention on Women. The Convention on Racism was fast-tracked and it was quickly ratified. The Convention on Women was held back by the State Department and only presented to the Senate Foreign Relations Committee late in the session. So late that end-of-session rules applied. Under those rules, a single vote in committee could keep an item from coming to the floor. This enabled Nancy Kassebaum, Republican senator from Kansas, to block CEDAW ratification from consideration. By the next session, the Republicans controlled the Senate, and ratification was clearly impossible once again. Hillary Clinton knows the U.S. and the global women's movements very well. She has been considered one of us by many feminists, and many major feminist organizations have endorsed her candidacy. If she attains the presidency of the United States, then we'll find out whether she has the courage to publicly appoint feminists to positions of power in the administration and to submit a budget that tries to rectify the fiscal neglect and rollbacks against women and the poor. For Wings, I'm Frieda Worden reporting. Thanks as always to Suzette Cullen and to Genevieve Vaughn, editor of the new book, Women and the Gift Economy. Wings website is www.wings.org. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album, A Circle is Cast. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.